My name's Tamsin Westall and welcome to Fresh from the Pod Gardening Stories. Now this episode is such a treat. Roy Lancaster, yes I did say Roy Lancaster, is the ultimate plantsman and someone who I have looked up to for many years. Roy has travelled the world in search of plants, been the curator of the Hillier Arboretum. He is one of the most decorated horticulturalists, and I was keen to find out how his time in Malaya, sleeping in the jungle, influenced his passion for plants. I discovered this and so much more. Oh, well, Roy, it is so lovely to see you. You look really well. I know the podcasters can't see this, but you look great.
Well, thanks to my wife, Sue.
She
keeps me up together.
Excellent.
Especially with all this technology.
Oh, no, she's been fantastic. We've had a good practice session this morning. It's like trying to fly to Mars doing a podcast on Zoom, isn't it, a bit?
Yes.
Now, the last time I saw you and chatted to you, we were at Exbury. We'd gone on a visit with a group of other gardeners and garden writers. And I remember at the end, we all sort of gathered together and we said, where's Roy? And you'd gone. You were in the depths of Exbury looking at plants. And what it really impressed on me then was that you look at things so differently to us, to most people. You know, we were chatting about the weather and saying, oh, this is lovely. But you were in sort of almost what I would call a trance. It was as if you'd gone into Narnia. When did you realise that's how you take plants in?
Well, as far as Exbury is concerned, now you mentioned that, I've been going to Exbury for many, many years, since the 60s was my first visit. And as you realised on that day, it's vast. Yeah. And it's been heavily planted, richly planted, since the 1920s, 1930s. And it's full of all kinds of interesting plants. And I always said about Exbury, it's like any really big, rich collection. Another one is Carey's in Cornwall. You can go there every time. And every time, no matter how long you spent on each visit, you're going to see new things that have been there all the while, but you've either they haven't been in flower or they're fruiting for the first time. And I'm wandering off there because there are paths in every direction, and I kind of get lost because I'm really thinking and looking at the plants. But I tell you what, one of the things I've always found with plants, a lot of people have been interested in plants since they were young, and they often move on. You see new plants every day, and especially if you travel, you're going to see all kinds of exciting things. But every new plant doesn't necessarily replace the memory of a former plant. From a young age, once I started learning about wildflowers, which is how I first came into plants,
yes,
wildflowers, I'd be looking at everything was new. Every plant I saw was new because I didn't know its name. And so I started to try and find out how to identify what the names were, all I could find about that plant. And then I progressed. Then years later, I finally, today, I'm 82 now, coming up 83 next month, I find that I can look at a plant that I've seen hundreds, if not a thousand times or more. A common plant, it might be a spear thistle in a field, or bluebells in the forest, and I can stand there and I like to think, I put my mindset on, when did I first see you? When was that first occasion? And I can recall the excitement, and that excitement never leaves. So I never think, oh, I've seen that, done that, been there. Every moment I've lived and every plant moment I've had is in there. And it's almost an instant recall, and the magic of that moment when I'm looking at a plant for the first time and a clue what it was, and I look at it again all these years later and think, yeah, I remember the first time, and I can look at that plant almost as if it's new the first time,
So and like a friend. Yeah, like a friend.
Imagine me being in the middle of Exbury.
Yeah. Quite incredible. But, I mean, what I can't quite get my head around, I have the most dreadful memory. How do you remember all these names? Or is it because you have so many stories attached to the plants?
I think stories are a very important thing. I know you sometimes meet people who are really good on recall and can remember names, and that's very much a question of memory. The older you get, then the less able you are to do that. You can maybe remember the plant, but not the name. And so early on, I found the stories of plants really interesting. Mm. Ever since my first start in Bolton Parks in 1953, and I had these two foremen who took me in hand, and I was new to all this, really innocent, and in this wonderful walled garden, and then there's a rock garden as well. And the two foremen grabbed hold of me, took me into the walled garden, then the rock garden, and said, right, now you may think you know a lot about plants, but all you know about are wildflowers, okay? And you only know their English name, their common names. If you're going to really learn and get on in this career, then you've got to learn about these plants, most of which you've never seen before, and they come from foreign places. And you've got to learn their proper names, their Latin names, because we never had Latin at school. They told me that if we'll teach you a new name, a new plant every day, not just the name of the plant, we'll teach you a story about it, where it comes from, who found it, and so on.
And, fantastic.
And then we will not teach you another until you remember that.
Gosh.
And, and they gave me a notebook. That's the first thing. They gave me a notebook, and that's, they said, write everything in this notebook, help me to remember. And I was 15 then, and that's when I started my notebooks. And I've had notebooks ever since, and anything of interest plant-wise, and generally in life, really, I've never got on with diaries, but notebooks are different. I'm used to writing in notebooks and little stories or whatever. And so it's the stories of plants that really got me hooked.
Yeah.
And the stories always remain, though a name might fade, if only temporarily.
Yeah,
I'll remember. I know this plant, and I remember. I remember what the story is about it.
Do you know what the story I want to know more about you is? Your time in Malaya. I mean, honestly, my father was in Korea, so I remember talking to him about that. But you know, for someone from Bolton, a young man, to suddenly end up in a jungle, I take it, in Malaya. I mean, what an extreme environment. And I'm wondering whether that experience really encouraged you to have the confidence to travel later in life and to look at a totally different catalogue of plants.
Yeah, obviously, it's what is often called a seminal moment, going to Malaya. And I could have stayed after training. I remember the corporal, as we were preparing for a passing out parade, this is for 2 years, and he said, well, Lancaster, there are two of you in your platoon have done really well in physical training. So well, I find it unbelievable now. I mean, physical training, anyway. So well that I'm asking if you would stay on and train to be a physical training instructor. I don't know. I've been looking forward to going to Malaya because all the jungle and something new. And of course, I've made some really good pals in my platoon. We've really gone on. People I never met before. And you learn to get on with each other. You get your roughnecks and all that sorted out in training. And then you find your new friends, your close friends. And for me, I feel part of another family. And the thought of going to Malaya, if you don't mind, Corporal, I'd rather go to Malaya with all my friends. And he said, you must be crazy. If you stay on, you'll become a Lance Corporal immediately. So you'll have promotion. You'll have weekend leave. You'll be able to see your family every weekend. And you're not far away. You'll be here in Preston. It's not far from my hometown, Bolton. you're on the doorstep for your hometown. It'll be easy peasy. Go to Malaya. Oh, there'll be scorpions, spiders, snakes, diseases of all kinds, things waiting to bite or sting you, and then terrorists who are actually out there to, kill you if you...
Gosh, right.
If you're unlucky. And I thought about it, and I said, yeah, okay, but you haven't mentioned the plants.
He's probably not in his mindset, the plants.
No. he could have said, it's an order, but he didn't. I said, if you don't mind, I'd like to stick with my platoon and go out to Malaya. And he never expected that. And so arriving all the way to Malaya, I was keeping my journals, my notebooks, all the way out, 6 weeks on a troop ship, right. All the way around the Cape, because the Suez Canal was closed, of course, during the Suez crisis. And we stopped off the Canary Islands. Wow. The Canary Islands. And I actually saw wild canaries. And then the next place was Cape Town. And then Durban. And each place we were allowed to go ashore. And I was heading to the Botanic Garden. Or in Cape Town, we were taken on a round trip from the ship. It was going to last 5 hours. And it was a really little tourist thing around the country, around the Table Mountain. And then we ended up at a place for a barbecue. But every time we stopped and I got out, I was always the last one back on the bus.
See, there you are, Exbury again. You were you're the last one.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And you can imagine, I was seeing really rare plants I'd never seen before, strange things. But I was also seeing very familiar plants from my parks days. And I saw my first white alice, my first blue lobelia, which comes from South Africa. And to see that, and I'm thinking, so this is where you come from. This is where you belong. Not in a hanging basket and outside some town hall or in somebody's window box. This is for real. And it's the excitement, which is still with me to this day, of seeing plants that I'm familiar with in their home site, the native situation. That I find the most exciting thing of my life. And I've been so lucky in seeing so many plants in the wild, where they come from. And it's really like meeting up when you're in a strange town and you meet up with somebody in a pub or wherever, and you haven't met them before, it's a new person. You might wonder where they come from. All you know is what you're talking about. And to find out where they come from, and you need to know that to begin to understand, in my case, the plant.
Gosh, and so did you actually sleep in a jungle? I mean, what was the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we went on operations in the jungle, and there were so many occasions. Early on, of course, you have jungle training, several weeks jungle training, and so you learn how to, trust the jungle for a start, because it can be, for a first time, can be a really scary place, especially at night. But you were taught to look for things which became familiar, and then that made you feel more comfortable. And of course, I was looking at the plants, and not plants, not just plants, beetles, insects, scorpions, yes, leeches. And leeches, I don't know anybody who could honestly say, I love a leech.
No.
I've never heard of a song being composed about a leech. Almost everything else has had a song composed about it, good or bad. And so, but I was in close contact with leeches when on guard duty in the jungle, and I'd watch them coming like a little loopy, like a loopy caterpillar, and they could either detect movement. I used to think maybe they could smell the warmth of your presence, and I would flick them off my boots. And they maybe land a yard away, a meter away, and then they'd rear up and kind of move around and then head back in my direction. And it's only when I flicked them beyond a certain distance that they would give up and just go away, disappear. So I've had to study all these things and what made them tick. And so for me, the jungle was an amazing place. It was a great new kingdom for me. And I thought it'd be a shame just to look at plants, and that would have kept me busy forever. But I couldn't ignore the birds, which was my first love, of course, before yes. plants, and any animals and insects. And I was collecting everything in sight that was collectible, and I was sending them all my plant material, which I pressed under in sheets of newspaper under my mattress. I can imagine what my fellow soldiers thought about that.
Was anybody else interested in what you were doing?
At that time, no. At that okay. time, no. The guys, we'd come back from an operation in the jungle, and all you wanted to do was have a break. Yeah. And so you'd have at least a day or a couple of days maybe in between operations. And most of my colleagues would lie on their beds reading mail from home or comics, or usually comics, or occasionally a newspaper. But I was busy pressing my plants and then writing my notes about them and then packing them up and sending plants off to the Singapore Botanic Gardens, and anything non-planty went to the Raffles Museum in Singapore. So insects and spiders and snakes and moths, you name it. And of course, they were writing back to me, the boffins in these places, and giving me the names of these. Of all these things, insects, plants, whatever. And sometimes it was something quite common. It was first for me, of course, but yeah. it's quite common. And sometimes it was something. I remember collecting a really obscure, weedy thing growing near or to the edge of a jungle. And I sent that away just for interest. And I got this message back, this letter, saying that this particular plant it was a member of a large family, but this was new to the province in which I was, the state in which I collected it. And I collected, in my 18 months, I collected 10 plants, which were new to Malaya. But the interesting point was, in connection with my interest in wildflowers at the very beginning, 8 of those plants were plants grown there, they'd been introduced from Britain or Europe. They were weeds I remember from my early years, working for Bolton Parks.
Good and Lord.
My first and so they were friends. Like, I found gorse, the common gorse, growing on a mountaintop. And obviously that had been brought there by some homesick person. It was a memory of home. And the same things has happened in history. Thistles in New Zealand, strange plants growing in southern Chile, and places, these outlandish places where people have gone to live. Scottish okay. farmers in the south of Chile, and of course all the settlers in Australia and New Zealand and places. So every plant was exciting. You just, and that gave me tremendous pleasure and excitement, far more than any book or comic. And so I was never really able to forget everything. I was always doing something.
Always busy.
I was, yes. And to begin with, the guys thought, what's a guy, a soldier, one of us, and he's pressing flowers under his bed. What's all this about? And when eventually, when they realized I was getting all these letters back, they then came up with the idea. You can just imagine them thinking, trying to work me out. I was obviously, as my sergeant major said when I was leaving, and he'd asked me, look, Lancaster, I have to say, you're a real character. We're going to miss you. It was the nicest thing that this sergeant major ever said to me. And indeed, he asked if he could keep. I'd pickled a thing called a green whip snake in a jar of alcohol that a good pal of mine was a medical orderly. He pickled for me. And also a Malayan black scorpions, one of the largest scorpions. And I had them like trophies. I collected them and had them identified. And they were sitting up in the company office with shields, one for football, and cups, one for boxing. And there were these two. And he said, do you mind leaving them, Lancaster? Can we keep them? I said, well, I can't take them with me, Sergeant Major, but you're welcome to them. Yes. I often wonder where those are now.
Yeah.
Times moved on. That's a long, long time ago. That's 1957 I came back.
So how old were you? How old were you when you went?
I would have been 18.
Yeah. I mean, that is such a sort of incredible start to your adult life. And when you came back, where did you go from there?
Well, I came back and I resumed my training when I was called up. I hadn't finished my apprenticeship. And so, I needed to sort of remind myself of various things in the parks, and there were various things I hadn't done as an apprentice. And so the next year, I resumed my apprenticeship, and I kind of caught up with things, as well as with friends and colleagues and contact, but I caught up with garden plants, and I also got to work in a drawing office. I'd never done that before. That's where I ended up. I worked in a nursery and propagation, learning how to propagate all kinds of plants. And we did that in a wall garden on the edge of Bolton, which was used for growing woody plants, shrubs and climbers and things. And one of my old foremen, who was a real favourite of mine, he'd become a good friend by then, and he'd been put in charge of this nursery. And I was told I was going to this nursery under my old foreman, a man called Doug Rugman, wonderful guy from Bristol. And together, in fact, what happened, we had this idea, why don't we search for the wildflowers growing within a mile radius of this nursery? It was already on the outskirts of Bolton to the north. And let's find and try and identify every plant growing within this mile radius. So every lunchtime, we'd wolf down our food and we'd go off into the wild looking. We were recording them, ferns, sedges, grasses, as well as all the flowering plants. And we saw all kinds of really wonderful things. And I remember once when we were sitting having our lunch and a friend of my foreman had called in to have a chat, and they were chatting away. And I was really waiting to get out and look out for more plants, you know. Looking at the time, we only had an hour. And I heard this guy saying to my foreman, "Is youngster here, is he keen on wild plants?" And my foreman said, "Keen?
Slightly.
I'll tell you, Roy, so keen on wild, he could take a girl down to pick wildflowers in the wood, and he would pick wildflowers." And he had a good laugh. But, of course, that was enough for me. I wanted to get out as fast as I could. I left, but my foreman quickly followed. He said, sorry about that. But that was, you know, that's kind of humour, you see. But it really spoke about my, you know, my interest and how keen it was. And because having started this story, the story of plants and where they come from and how they got here, it's the story goes on forever. You'll never get to the end. So there's always something else to look forward to. So I've always had this path, as it were, this always beckoning. You'll never know everything. You won't want to know anything. How boring that would be. But you never know everything. And every minute you could see something new or learn something new. I'm surrounded by all my books. I've got rooms full of books, of all kinds of books about wildlife and plants especially. And they're full of stories.
Which book would you absolutely not let go of? You know, what is your book that you adore on that shelf?
Oh, my goodness me. Oh, they're all kind. Oh, dear me. I say that would be really difficult. So many books I have, which are, I tell you what, some of my favourite books would be those written by some of my plant collector heroes, my plant hunters. And Wilson would be one of those. Obviously, he died long before, I think he died in 1930. And but he was one of the great plant hunters in terms of the number of plants he collected which were new, the number of garden plants he introduced, mainly from China, of course. And I have these books, several books he wrote, and some of them I was given them by a friend in America on one of my visits there. They were signed by him.
Gosh.
And it's the thing about signed copies of books. If it's signed by someone who you've enjoyed reading, or someone you admire, or for whatever other reason, and somebody who especially is no longer here, and I find that I can look at that signature, now this Wilson's signature, and I can think really hard and concentrate, and I can then imagine a hand with a pen forming that signature, and gradually, if I really think hard enough, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I can, because I'm familiar with him because of portraits of him and stories of his exploits, I can follow up from the pen up his arm, and then I can picture that. I can, in this case, I could picture Wilson, and that book is so important to me. But I don't have any one book. I could say the first book I ever had, which I still have, which was it's a book of plant names, that it was a simple book, but it was simply giving the Latin names of plants and what they meant. And also how to pronounce those Latin names. And that was well worn. It was given to me by one of my foremen at that time in 1953. And that's pretty worn. And it was full of little comments I'd made. And I underlined the different plants as I saw them. And I only just recently gone through the recent edition, the ninth edition of the Hillier Manual of Trees and Shrubs, Woody Plants. And during this lockdown, I've never been short of things to do, because I'm always writing, or I'm in the garden, or we're going on walks, or I'm emailing with garden friends and other friends, of course. And I decided to go through the manual, and all my notebooks from the 1960s that record plants seen abroad in other countries, and then underline those that are in the manual, underline them, and put a little note, the country, it might be Nepal, or it might be some, and the date. And
that you saw it.
It's a reminder of when I first saw that plant, and I know that that note relates to more information in one of my notebooks. So I can, then I know when, you know, I know the date, and I know where to find it. But in doing that, when you get to my age, people say, you live in the past. Well, you can't ignore the past. It's with you forever. And some people forget it. And sometimes for very good reason.
But when you're looking through your books, adding in where you've seen these plants, you have travelled extensively. Is there one plant sort of hunting expedition that you went on that stands out, or something that happened to you that was shocking? When you're no longer with us, God forbid, what will be the story, of your travels?
Every trip, every visit, every new country is a first, it's a special. I think I would believe that sometimes some of the very first things, it seems your first kiss, first time you ever kissed, my case, a girl. Well, I'll never forget that, but that's all it is. It was the first time, and it was new. And the same with plants. First time you see a new plant, you'll never forget it. And so I suppose my first real trip, it was an expedition, because I joined an expedition in 1971, to East Nepal, to the Himalaya, East Nepal. And I was invited to go on this trip by a friend of mine who we'd met in the very first year I joined Hilliers in 1962. And he was a Cornishman, the late Len Beer, bless him. He died only a few years after that expedition. If he'd lived, he would have been a great, famous plant explorer, no question. But we met, And he had this idea of, like me, of going on one of these expeditions that we'd read about. And a few years later, he was then at, he just left Cambridge Botanics. I was there before he went there. And he rang me one day, and I was working on a copy of the, or proofs of the first Hillier Manual, 1971, this is. And I was reading all the details, and the phone rang, and a voice said, "Oh, Len here. Roy, you know that I've been trying to organise an expedition to Nepal. Well, I've done it. It's on. Are you up for it?"
Yippee!
And I said, "Yes." Then he said, well, wait a minute. What will your boss say? What about..." And because looking back, when somebody asks you a question like that, you forget about all the... Hang on. What about, will you get the time off? Will you be paid while you're away? Will you... What about this? What about that? You're going to be away for 3 months in this case. But I've always said that when an opportunity comes your way and you feel that it's a wonderful opportunity, don't say no. Don't hesitate. Always say yes. Always say yes. And I remember someone else who told me this. I'm not sure it was Peter Seabrook once said to me, he said, "Always say yes when someone rings you or contacts. Will you do this? Will you write this? Or will you do this television program?"
That sounds like that? Peter. It sounds like him.
Yeah. And he said, "Always say yes." And then you have time to think about it and reason about it. And if you still believe, yes, I'm going to do this, you have time then to arrange things, whatever your commitments might be. You've got time. But never put anybody off by saying, no, it's not for me. No, thank you. He said, because if you say it too often, you find that no one actually contacts you. Oh, word gets round. Oh, he won't say yes. He won't agree. So you always say yes. It doesn't mean to say you'll always do it. Sometimes you realise it's not possible, or you're not the right person really to make the most of an opportunity like that. And sometimes I've thought, well, I can think of somebody who would be better than me in doing this, or in the case of plant hunting, who's never been on a plant hunting trip, but they really need to go. And so you put the name forward. If you can't do something, if you can't write an article, always make a suggestion of others, you know, colleagues, people, friends, you know, can do that and maybe will be need it more than you do. And certainly with our association, that's one of the great things that we share.
Yes. So you're referring to the Guardian Guild. Yeah.
That's what we're about. It's a sharing. That's the most important thing. You can't do everything. You're not the right person to do everything. Just choose the things that you feel you could do, you're confident about, you could do, make a good job of, and never turn down a challenge. But always remember, if you can't do it, there's somebody out there who might be desperate to do that.
Gosh. So when you're setting up to go on one of these expeditions, what do you take? I mean, are you really roughing it in a lot of circumstances? Or
no, some of the early ones, the Nepal one, yes. It was well organised, and that was, we were a team of five. And one of that team was a really good organizer. So he got the job of organizing. He also got the job of, was included in his his reference, the good job of dealing with all the first aid. So we had a big first aid box, for instance. And he was in charge of that. You can't have just anyone dipping into such a thing.
No.
So he was in charge. And there are a lot of wonderful stories on that one, but that's all in the book.
Yeah. So your book is My Life with Plants, is the book you're referring to.
No, the book I'm referring to is A Plantsman in Nepal.
Ah, yes, of course.
And that's about that expedition, just that expedition. And I felt, because we put everything in there, I felt that you need to know if you're going on an expedition of that kind. You'd be camping. And you won't be staying in hotels.
No.
You'd be out there with a tent, yeah. And And of course, it was well organized. You need someone who's good at that, organizing and thinking of all the things you just might need. And of course, you can always learn from other people. It's a great fraternity, the plant hunting, plant traveling, plantsman fraternity, because they share information. And there's nothing better than someone ringing you up and saying, look, this is my first time doing this. Have you any tips? Can you point me any direction? That's great. You can. It's not something that just stays with you. You can then spread it around. Good is information if you keep it?
Yes, very true.
You know, treat information and stories about plants, treat it like a hot chestnut. Someone will pass it to you, knowledge, in other words. Pass it as quickly as you absorb it and pass it on quickly.
Lovely.
So other people keep passing it on. That's what knowledge and information is all about.
What do you feel? Do you feel sort of confident that there are people sort of coming up behind you that are as passionate? I mean, you do. That's really good to hear.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've heard on and off in the past. It's not uncommon now. You hear people saying, some people would say, where are gardeners coming from? Where are we going to get our plantsmen? I've heard it on a regular basis over quite a few years, of course. Well, they've always said that. I remember once when I first joined Hilliers in 1962, and on one occasion I was sitting in the house, German's house, which was the Sir Harold Hilliers. He became Sir Harold Hilliers later, but Harold Hilliers' home. And he had a good old friend called Maurice Mason. And they'd had dinner, and Harold Hilliers had asked me, would I give a lecture afterwards? Not a lecture, show some of my slides. Not long after I came back from Nepal. And so I was setting this up with my own projection and everything in the lounge in the house. And they were chatting away. And I remember that Maurice Mason at one point saying to Harold Hilliers, you know, Harold, when you think about all the people been talking about, they're our age. Are the people coming up? Who would you see as people who are going to be taking our place one day? Mm. So, you know, assuming this kind of responsibility in whatever area of a horticulture you're in. And I never forgot that. I can't remember now who they talked about. And it wasn't me, I can tell you. But I just found that interesting. But I was a bit nervous trying to get all this slide presentation ready.
Yes.
But so you're thinking all the while. And I can tell you, my years of dealing with students and young people who are going through whether you call them apprenticeships or just a student serving, say, 2 years to 3 years, like Q and Wisley and so on, I've met so many of them. We've always had them coming to the Hilliers Gardens every year for about 20, 25 years now, and then coming back here to see my garden, which is a kind of little microcosm of my plant world. And then we wander around, I tell them stories, and then the best part of it, at the end of all those days, and we did this every year up to last year, we weren't able to do it this year, unfortunately, of course, and then we relax. Sue has made a lovely tea with scones and strawberry, everything you can think of. Nice, what an old English tea. And we sit around and said, right, I've done enough talking. Over to you. Mine was the last trip before they went into the big wide world. And I said, tell me about you. Where are you going? What are your dreams? How do you intend doing that? Let's have some feedback. And that was the best part. And we had just sit. And I couldn't help but think, oh, this was me. How many years ago? This was me. And I know how they feel. And I sense the excitement. You could see it. You could feel it. You could taste it. And I was so excited for them. And I said, well, make the most of whatever you attempt. Always do a good job. I always remember my old foreman saying, and I'd done something wrong. This is right at the beginning. And he said, you know, if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well, lad. So take heed, you pay attention. And so, you know, if it's worth doing, make the best of it. do your best. And that's all you can do. Do your best. Don't shirk it. And you'll never be disappointed. So,
you have certainly done your best. I mean, when really just to round off, looking at your name, CBE, VMH, FCI Hort, all those letters after your name, did you ever, as a young boy, when you started this journey, ever think that you would be so highly regarded by us all? You probably don't really take that on, but for so many people like myself, you are sort of, you are the man, you are our hero. How do you feel about that?
Well, if I said it kind of a slight embarrassment, because I hate, I'm an outgoing person, always happy. Yeah. And if I know, I want people to, I want to share. And but when I hear it, it's funny. I can't explain it. Years ago, never thought. I grew up with some of these greats that you mentioned, the greats of when I was younger, and like Hillier, for instance, and all so many big names, and television. Jeffrey Smith was a great hero of mine, and. Especially those people who came from nothing and made the most of having started with nothing, because they grasped life with both hands, and they grasped the excitement of it. Everything new, it was a challenge. And just the very fact, the first time, like I say, the first time that anything happens, first time you met somebody, the first time you saw a particular plant, and so it. Everything is special, all these separate issues. And in terms of these, I don't even look at these letters. Of course, I don't get me wrong, I was greatly honored. I felt lucky. Yeah. And sometimes I couldn't believe it. My wife would pinch me. But I got more out of the happiness it caused my family. I'm going to, for some of these awards, and being able to take your family with you. And so I was able to share it again. And that gave me great pleasure, that. But now I just want to see other people. I just get great joy out of seeing younger people coming up and starting to achieve. If I'd spoken to that person or exchanged information, I feel that little bit, part of their story. And the great thing about young people and young enthusiasts, they never stop coming. And despite what some people have been heard to say, there's a dearth of these people, we're not doing the training. Yeah. That's so negative. I agree. We need to work hard to make sure they get a good training, they get a good return in wage and all that. Everybody wants to achieve and to do well, especially if they're married, for their family. But there's a good range of people, and I've met quite a few. And I've met quite a few this last year, believe it or not, maybe at distance. But you sense their excitement, you sense their resolve, and you know in your heart they are going places. I've said it several times this last year, and to my wife said that he or she, they'll get somewhere. They really intend it. They've got what it takes. Wonderful. If you can be part of others' stories, I think that's the biggest achievement of all, personal achievement. You can be a little part of what people will be achieving, maybe long after I'm gone. That's all I could hope for.
Oh, well, Roy, honestly, you really have impacted on so many people's lives. I'm so, so excited that I've had this opportunity to talk to you. And, you're quite remarkable. So I thank you so much. And I hope to see you in person in another garden soon, let's hope.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing I'm looking forward to most of all. Seeing so many faces like your own and your colleague and others, not meeting them for real in the flesh. I'm really looking forward to that day. It'll come.
It will come.
Always be positive.
Oh, well, thank you, Roy. And I'll speak to you soon. Thank you. Roy Lancaster is undeniably an amazing storyteller. And as he was speaking to me, I just had this amazing clear image of him as a young soldier exploring the jungle in Malaya. I'm just so grateful that he didn't take up the offer of becoming a physical training instructor for the army. Just imagine what us gardeners would have missed out on if his career had taken a very different path. Thank you for joining me, and until next time, happy gardening.